to be called selfish, to be considered self-centered.
Like, it actually cannot be named that. Like, I don't want to be associated with the word selfish in any context.
Girl, selfish is not a bad word. It is about self-respect. It is about
what we want.
It is about
self-care.
It is about self-love,
self-fulfillment.
Welcome to the Selfish Latina Podcast,
where we get to be selfish together.
Okay, are we ready?
We're rolling.
You're so awesome. All right, so here we go.
So what's exciting to me in this work is when I have a chance to work with someone who's ready to take action. That to me is the ultimate opportunity to make an impact, and also not only on that person, but on the world that they want to impact. That's what jazzes me up. One human being can be affected, but then that human being is going to affect a whole group of people. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're hearing weird squeaking, that is my dog Cookie, who barks her face off if I leave her alone. So she's in the office with us today.
With Denise, so I met her 3 years ago when I was trying to prove my career self to me, and that I could do this big event all on my own. I didn't need anyone. And she was the keynote speaker at a conference for Latino students who received a scholarship.
Welcome Denise to the stage.
And it was in a time of my life where I was really grappling and figuring out what I wanted to do that was going to be self-fulfilling. When I met her and latched on for my dear life,
it really made an imprint on my heart. And about a year or 2 years after that, I was invited to do my second TED Talk and immediately knew that I wanted to include her in it. In the very beginning of this tour, I found myself in San Antonio, Texas, and I met a young woman who impressed me so much. So we're eating our dinner, having conversation, getting to know each other, and she looks at me and says, "Denise, I have something to tell you. I want to tell you my story, which includes a secret."
I just sort of drop it on her, like, "Hey, I'm HIV positive, and I have a son with autism," and I kind of everything that I would just had been holding on for so long, and I just sort of I didn't even unpack it. I just like dropped it all on her, and she carried it so well, and respected me so much, and honored my truth, and I felt like she empowered me to stand in my truth.
I'll never forget that when she called me and she said, "Will you be my mentor?" I feel goofy.
And I just asked her to be my mentor because she's told me, she's like, "You know, you have to share the story. You have to share your story. You have to share it with the world." And I was already ready to do it. I think I needed someone else who didn't know me to validate that for me. And she did.
And then that set off a course of, I would say, about once a month calls. Every once in a while, she would always text me and ask me if I could talk. And it got to the point where even if she called me, I would 100% of the time pick up the phone because she had so much respect for my time. And also the things that she needed were so precious to me. And also because I enjoyed believing in her. Like I enjoyed seeing what my belief in her gave her. She actually took action on the things that I coached her on. She was coming to me with real problems, like from a person that was committed to their transformation.
I wanted people to stop being scared of people living with HIV. I knew that, you know, it was honestly keeping me up at night, not necessarily my status, but wanting to share it. You know, the idea of wanting to share it, wanting to be an advocate was keeping me up at night. And I had talked to my family about coming out and being an advocate. You know, I had already had a blog called The Esposa Experience, where I talked about my misadventures in trying to be the perfect esposa, which I am not. But I thought, okay, well, I'll use that. Like, I already have this platform. I'll just keep going. And I had all my friends supporting me, but I just had, you know, my husband who was a little bit scared. He's total opposite of me. He's shy, reluctant. And I had to make sure he was on board because it's not just my status. It's his status too. So it's our status, right? And then he realized, especially under this administration, just how much fear-mongering goes on. We're not contributing to the solution. We're contributing to the problem by being quiet and caving under this fear and under the stigma. So once he was on board, then I was like, okay, all systems go. And then my dad says, well, what do you mean? Like, you're going to put it on Facebook? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to put it on Facebook and everywhere else. The interwebs, it's everywhere. And then he just kind of froze up. And I'm like, Dad, you're the same dad who told me a year ago, like, I should write a book about it. And so now you're, and he's like, well, I just didn't think you were going to go that far. And I'm like, Facebook far? Like, what do you mean? And so then I kind of had to realize, well, I'm going to do it whether you like it or not. Because then I think maybe at that point it was like repressed rebellion that I was just like, I'm just going to do it.
To me, it was very inspiring that I'd never known anyone with HIV to my awareness. And that I was so impressed with her candor and her confidence, and also what she shares, her occupation with wanting to kind of be an advocate, to me spoke volumes of her. You know, like here someone has every reason just to be pissed off and just to walk around like a jerk and be a jerk, but she is concerned with how can I save a community? How can I make an impact on a community? Like, that's what's keeping her up at night. You know, when we first started this project in the very first, like, year, we imagined all of these amazing things happening. And we're like, and then we're going to have a movie and a podcast. And maybe we'll even do a retreat and people will fly in from everywhere. And I didn't even know these women when we were dreaming so big. I had no idea who they were.
I'll take two.
We can. It would be good to have the train sound. Because, you know, all the women came in on the train and we kept, like, coming back and going to get them as a group. It was so fun. Seeing these women, it feels like family. It feels like I'm greeting my primas, you know? All of us had been in a Facebook group for well over a year. And we'd been communicating with each other, I'm going to say for at least 2 years. Every week or so, there would be some kind of communication.
And the idea was brought up by Brenda to do like a girls trip. And that idea of a girls trip went into Denise's head, and Denise being Denise, like, turned into something like huge and great about our Latinidad and identity. And so that's why we're here. So we were invited to come. And I think that we all have this love and respect for Denise that when she says to do something, we just kind of do it, you know, like we got to trust. And we know it's for a good reason because we know that she'll handle whatever we're getting into, because I don't know what I'm getting into, and that's a really new space for me, especially as a control freak. But I know that we're going to be okay, because it's kind of at the helm of Denise and you guys. So, yeah, I'm excited. We're going to go up to Breckenridge. I think that's how you say it. Somewhere up. It's like the Alps for me. I'm kind of excited to get my, like, Elsa Frozen Let It Go on, because it's all snowing, and I'm really excited about that.
I was so happy to get this car from Toyota. I was super nervous just because I typically don't drive. And so, so here I am driving this car with all these beautiful souls in it all the way up there. So I'm like gripping the steering wheel. We were just happy to be in it. Like we were just so happy to be together and talking. And I think Janelle was in the front seat and she was like my navigator, handing me my water, and the most fun I've had in a really long time. Because how many times do women ever make the time for each other to get together with intention, like with so much anticipation and so much confidence that we're going to have such a great time? It wasn't just like facials and petties. It was going to be great food, great music, great company in a beautiful environment, and sparking the conversations that are my favorite to have, which are about identity and Latinidad and really where everyone's at in their own journey with it. My existence around this project is like, I'm just so used to people just getting real very fast, but it's going to seem fast probably for the podcast. And this is pretty par with what you can expect going to a screening or being around me. It's going to be really fun and also really deep and safe.
To what Teresa said, which really got me too, was I'm not a mom. I'm not an employee, I'm not whatever I've done, I'm not a wife, I'm not a daughter or sister, I'm me. And as liberating as that is, it's also really scary, mm-hmm. right? Even though I've been finding her and I've been doing the work, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road. Like you said, this is a test, right? Okay, like you slowly, you know, in hour increments every Tuesday for your therapist, you've been meeting Janelle, but now you're here. No distractions, no time up, no appointments coming. So, you know, I don't have the therapist rushing me out the door. It's just me. Anxiety and depression are thieves. And and for me, anxiety and depression already took so much time away from my kids. I was in bed, stuck. I could not move. Could not move for a whole year. I was just in bed. And I talked about it on my Instagram, how my kids would take, I would just give my kid my phone and they would take pictures of me. You know, it's so sad because it's literally just me laying down in bed. And my mom, who always thought my mental health was a joke, you know, when I came out to her, I cut myself as a teenager, she called me stupid, you know, but she didn't understand. She just didn't understand, you know, she didn't understand that from my dad's side of the family, this is an actual thing, right?
Yeah.
And she gets it now, thank God. But she came to me and she said, you know, it's not that your kids need you, it's that you need you. And so for me to be away from them, right? But now that I'm better, now that I feel better, I'm away from them. I'm like, you still have time away from them. You know what I mean? So I feel like I was not there. You know, my kids would be crying and I could not get myself out of bed to go see what was wrong. My husband did so much. And so now the roles are reversed, right? Like now he is experiencing depression for the first time in his life with the death of his father just a few months ago. And so I'm being there for him, but then I'm also like, but I'm not there for him. I'm here. Like it's, you know, but he understands. He understands that this is a process and he understands that, well, it's a little worse off than he was. So I needed a little more work. And so that's really that kind of it for me. Like, why I feel like I just need to run away and go home is because I just feel like time is of the essence right now. My children being so young and having had so much time robbed of them.
Yeah, you do need to be there for them, but you also need to have your cup filled. Hearing Janelle talk about depression and anxiety being thieves, first of all, just at this point in the retreat, you know, there's different levels that we're speaking on. And, you know, just by her sharing so candidly, it just brought the entire room to a completely different level. And it's important. And especially when we're talking about issues of mental health, because here's the thing, not enough attention is being paid to our young Latinas specifically. When I talk about that, I say teenage age Latinas. And I get to interface with them sometimes as teenagers, but most times as adults, as mothers, as friends, as participants, audience members, interviewees, and time and time and time again, I hear about their lives and the things that have happened that have shaped them to the women that they are, and the things they grapple with are often in this realm. And it's time to start making room for these conversations, and that's really the mission of the project, is to create space for these conversations to happen. Because like I said, I don't know the answers, but I do know this: when people have a chance to get these things off their chest, and when other people are listening, have a chance to say, me too, or I know how you feel firsthand, healing happens. And it's really only from that point that anything that can be created. But until we heal, we can't create. And I'm really committed to both. I had great certainty that it was going to be magical, because any conversation about this is magical, especially like a thoughtful conversation. And all these women were smart, critical thinkers that examine things from a place of curiosity. And so coming from there, magic is certain, right, to happen.
We are the colonizer. We are both. Mm-hmm. And there is anybody innocent in this. We had an amazing conversation with Larissa at that Japanese restaurant, and she went back and back and back into history. World history is about colonizing, and there's no one innocent in that conversation.
It's being utilized, again, to keep us apart. Stuck.
What is it being utilized to keep us stuck?
It depends
us stuck.
On how you're using it.
That conversation, it moves through it. I feel like
people use it as a way to stay angry, and they make themselves something different than what they are.
Right, we're children born of trauma.
It's like what Brenda said, which was one of my favorite quotes so far, is it was not out of reach, it was out of my comfort zone. And I think it's so out of the culture's comfort zone to like believe that we're still the victim. And like, it's out of our comfort zone to ponder like, what if we're not? And how could we how could we turn the tables? I think the world, honestly, that's why I believe Trump is president. Because if we were organized and if we stopped believing this lie that we're victims, we could have made sure that didn't happen. But it did.
I wanted to, just really quick, because it's so profound what you guys are talking about. And I agree with you that like, because I am too like, man, the systems are going to keep us down and I want to get mad about it. And it's like, yes. We're smart enough to re-strategize to think of it. Because I think of like, we're a culture in grief. Mm-hmm. And the grief has stages, right? Mm-hmm. How many, what, 7 stages of grief?
There? Oh, yeah. Wow.
And we're kind of going through them. Uh-huh. And we're each going through them in different places and different times, right? Because then our own lives contribute to either taking us back or not. But I hope that we're getting to a place because of this. I don't hope. I know.
Yes.
We're
yes.
getting to a place. So what that is that, you know, we have to come to the realization that we are all, number one, Latinos, Hispanics, I prefer Latinos. We're all really from like the same family in a sense. And that family is bred of trauma. Right? Because you had these completely happy, indigenous, beautiful cultures that were happening. And then you had Europeans come in and take over and enslave and rape and destroy and all of these things. And from the rapes came people trying to just live and figured, okay, if I can't beat them, I'll join them. And so they married conquistadores and they created families, and what does that mean if my father was just this mad rapist, or, you know, all these generations of all this trauma that keeps and continues, and then we immigrate, and then we're trying to identify here, and we're not good enough here, and we're not good enough there, and we're not good enough here because we're not truly indigenous to the land, and it's just complex. And so as a culture, because that's what happened, that's how Spanish is in all of those countries, right, is because the conquistadores came. And they just island hopped, right? And just raged and ravaged and all these things. But look what came of it, right? We all speak, we do have this huge extended family. You know, you have these terrible things. You have great food, really, that came of it. At the same time, you have merengue, where you had, you know, enslaved men and women who were chained up. And so all they could do was just boom, boom, boom. They could just move, right? Just together. And that's where the merengue came from. And all these, you know, you have these beautiful things that came from it, but then it's like, but then they were slaved. And so it's kind of this entire really deep and sad process that I think you go through with grief, where you have those several different layers or stages of grief. And I don't know what stage we're all in collectively, and I think that we're all in different stages. She's further along in the process than I am, and I think as a culture, until we kind of really identify and realize, look, we come from trauma. We are traumatized people, and we cannot keep doing this to ourselves. We're continuing trauma, whether that's through violence, whether that's through discrimination, whether that's through misogyny, whether that's through homophobia, whether that's through whatever it is. Those are just continuations of trauma that we can break, that Latinos can really be the bridge builders for the world, because we are blonde hair and blue-dyed and black. Right, and everything in between. And if we can just collectively come together and realize we can do this and we can help heal the world because we're familia, and when you heal, you become a better person.
There's new conversations and then there's the same old conversations. And I believe that there's some conversations that I cannot wait until they're retired and off to the old folks' home. And there's some new, brand new, fresh, interesting conversations that I believe can move the needle. One of the things that has sprouted from this work is that the quality of the conversations I get to have and inspire are really rich and really substantive, and they're addicting because they're new. They're not the same old thing.
which is that colonizer, colonizee conversation to me, which is kind of a tired conversation, into something different and new, which is called, like, could we as a culture be in the stages of grief? And to me, that's new and a way to explain where different members of the collective culture are at. Really, the hope is that we will evolve into something that can actually change and affect things for somebody else versus just being focused on ourselves and our own pain and what's been done to us. I want to steer the ship is in the direction of an evolution, like really standing for people being able to evolve out of the anger so that we can get to the next phase and the next stage and the next stage and like begin to really affect change, because you cannot affect change when you're pissed. I don't care what anyone says. There's a meme out there that says, if you're not super pissed, then you're not paying attention. And I don't know about that. I don't know. I am paying attention and I'm not pissed. Like, and certain things have happened to me. For fuck's sake, I was kicked out of an Uber just for having made this movie. And I'm also not saying that people don't have a right to be pissed. The ability to take action isn't going to be sourced by a place of anger. It's going to be sourced from a place of hope.
You know,
I'm having deja vu. I love this. Yes, thank you.
We've been here before.
Okay, yes.
Like that unapologetic, like I wrote a whole thing. It's like these people that hashtag unapologetic don't even really get what that is.
What that means.
It's, guess what? Unapologetic is when I decide the world, when that the world doesn't owe it to me, but I owe it to me, and then I do the work, then I get to walk in unapologetically, just like Teresa. She does the work. She says it, she does it. She benefits. Nobody else gets that, gets to walk around with the confidence that this woman has, because she's her word to herself. My cup, I fill myself. And FYI, this weekend is the cup. My cup gets filled, and it was so filled last night, it was like, I couldn't even handle how awesome. This is an example of filling our cups. This is what that looks like. Extremely curated. And you know, thanks for acknowledging my confidence, but Janelle, you have no idea how much you've added to my life. You have no idea. I don't even care. It's so easy to see past anyone's, like, I'm going to just say limitations, because your strength and your fucking awesomeness is so bright to me. Like, you are so special to me and added so much. Okay, so like I have patience for years for all of you.
This is the end of part one about the retreat that we had in the mountains in Breckenridge, Colorado. But really what it was about was the extraordinary conversations that happen and the incredible women that have come into my life as a result of following my dream. Coming up in part two, you're going to have a chance to meet my friend Brenda, an extraordinary woman from Brooklyn, New York, who added so much to the conversation.
And what I really wanted to say was thanks to Denise, right? Because this was my idea initially, and it was not supposed to look like this, right? I was like, oh, let's just get together for a weekend. Like, it'll be really great. Hee, hee, hee. And then it turned into all of this.
Let us know what you think about this podcast by sliding into our DM on IG at Project Enya. This episode is brought to you by the Enya Dream Accelerator, which is a 6-week coaching program designed for ambitious Latinas who are ready to take action on their biggest dream so that you can finally live the life that you imagine. And let me tell you, the women in this cohort are killing it. If you are ready to jump, ladies, now is the time. Get on the wait list. Make sure you find out about when this program is going to open. You do not want to miss it. Thanks for listening, and join us next time on the Selfish Latina podcast, where we get to be selfish together.